I don't think the president of the United States gets to decide what the name of things is. That would be up to cartographers, maybe.
Yeah, it's an international thing.
It's the Gulf of Mexico. It's on the globe. You may not like that. Gulf of Mexico. Oh, that's Mexico. That's so I don't know what you can do about that.
He didn't mention New Mexico at any point.
Maybe we should just call that New. That'll teach him. But we have, I'm trying to think of, are there any examples in our lives of late? Eric Zoin joins us now, the Picayune Sentinel publisher, where we have changed how we call something. And all I can think of is the pronunciation of things. I remember we used to call Chile, Chile. Now we call it Chile. What's the city in
National
Ukraine?
Parks. Used to be McKinley National Park, now Denali.
We used to
things
call
like
it
that.
Kiev. And then we learned
it, Kiev.
It's Kiev.
Right.
Eric, any other examples of things that there's no harm done, that nobody wins or loses? We just sometimes call things, pronounce them at least differently.
Well, there are military bases that changed. Fort Bragg, for instance, I believe changed its name. I don't know to what. I just remember that there were some, there was movement afoot to change the name of some of those military bases.
Oh, well,
bases.
We're doing that all over Chicago with the names of streets, parks, monuments. We're either hiding them or changing the names of schools because it's named after a segregationist or something.
Right. I don't think that a president of the United States has the authority to rename a body of water that is international like that. But he's certainly welcome to try.
Well, what happens is, I mean, look, if you can say, if you say often enough that you won an election that you didn't, people begin to believe you won the election. It almost becomes the narrative. So if the United States just starts calling the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America, that could become commonplace, but I don't know that it would get printed on maps. You could call it your backyard swimming pool if you want. It's not, but you can call it whatever you want.
Right. I mean, and not every renaming is necessarily political, or it is not necessarily something that's trying to keep us up to date. When we renamed the Circle Interchange for Jane Byrne, a lot of people thought that wasn't going to take, but in fact it has taken, I think, and I think the reason is because of radio traffic reporters, that they went along with that. If they had decided it was going to still be the Circle Interchange, that it would have stayed the Circle Interchange, but they call it the Jane Byrne, and now it's the Jane Byrne, right?
Truth or Consequences, New Mexico had a different name, but they decided to change it for the publicity that changing it to a game show brought, and there are other examples where, for one reason or another, look at the bowl games in college football, which are advertising vehicles. In one instance, for was it Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon? One of the shows had a bowl game named after them. So, again, that's all different than the president saying we ought to change the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. But you can say whatever you want, and that's one of the things that he said. Fair enough. Eric Zoin is the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. It's a weekly newsletter you can get for free. Email ericzoin@gmail.com. I want to start real quick. Do you have any other insight in your surfing this morning, Eric, about Mike Madigan testifying on his own behalf at his corruption trial?
It doesn't surprise me too much because he is a very careful speaker and a focused person who probably can speak for himself very well without falling into any traps. It was a surprise when Rod Blagojevich decided to testify on his own behalf at his trial. When was that? Back in 2010 or 2011? Or his second trial. His first trial, he didn't. And, of course, Blagojevich is famously garrulous and would just prattle on and say whatever. And Madigan is very careful in what he says, very tight-lipped. But it is quite unusual in these federal trials for defendants to testify on their own behalf. Alderman Burke did not testify on his own behalf. Former Governor George Ryan did not testify. The ComEd people did not testify on their own behalf. And, as a juror, I kind of like the idea of hearing the defendant explain himself or herself. And I think it's probably going to be a smart move. It was not a smart move for Blagojevich to testify on his own behalf because he wasn't very persuasive, and he was just a terrible liar. But Madigan may be able to help himself.
What would the thrust of that conversation on the stand be like? Just imagine the points the prosecution would try and score, and how would he bat them away, Eric?
Well, I mean, certainly the first stage of this is a long examination by his own attorneys, excusing what happened, explaining away what happened, making it seem very innocent or harmless, the arrangements that happened. And then the prosecutors are going to get up and try to, you know, draw the lines between what Madigan did and what he had the legislators do and what the financial benefits that came to his firm and so on. So it's going to be interesting. And I think what it suggests to me, and I'm not covering this trial, so I don't know for sure, but it suggests to me that his lawyers feel like this is a good idea, that he may not be winning at this point, that they may feel like that they've lost the jury, or that they need, because this is really, in a way, it's a Hail Mary pass, because it is very risky. You can say one wrong thing or get trapped in some stammering moment and end up looking really bad in front of the jury. I think it's a gamble. It's always a gamble to put a defendant on the stand. I mean, I'm sure you'll have actual lawyers coming on and telling you about this, how rare it is and why it's rare, is that it's very easy to get tripped up, very easy to have a jury think that, well, he seems shifty, or I don't believe that answer, and therefore he must be guilty of everything that he's charged with. And, you know, not everyone is all that well-spoken on the witness stand. Not everyone has clear memories of things. So that's just what it suggests to me, that his lawyers think that this is not going as well as they'd hoped, and that they need this in order to swing the jury back to their side.
Mike Madigan, the former Illinois House Speaker, serving in that role as House Speaker for a state legislature longer than any state legislature has served in any state in the Union. He's an historic figure as well as a local one. He eventually resigned when these charges came up and when he was convicted. He is now on trial for a host of corruption crimes, including getting jobs or internships or no-pay jobs for people in exchange for consideration for a contract that ComEd wanted. That's kind of the thrust of at least some of this. And I wondered too, Eric, if it won't come down to what's the definition of corruption. Blagojevich fell on that sword, but I just wonder if, you know, negotiation and horse trading are legitimate means of getting things done. I think if you just, you know, literally watch the sausage being made, you would at various steps along the way say, okay, then we'll compromise on this, and you get that, and you get this, and you get that. So when does it become corruption? And he did not get rich. Nobody was putting money in his pocket. George Ryan literally had money in his pocket. So I wonder if that's the angle that they would take.
Well, it's the angle that everybody charged with corruption takes in the Dirksen federal courthouses. They say this is just politics as usual. I want to just correct a little thing you said. You said that Madigan had been convicted. I think you meant to say he'd just been charged, because he's not.
Right. Well, there you go. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'll make sure that, because protect the license of WGN.
But yeah.
But in any case, yes. I mean, you know, this is the standard response. They say, well, look, this is politics. This is, you know, I do this for you, you do this for me, and this is how legislation gets made. It's not pretty always, but, you know, that the donations come in, and yeah, you know, we approve your rail project, or we contract with your company. And I think a lot of it is pretty ugly as far as the public is concerned, that we would like to think that our lawmakers are voting and passing laws and so on based purely on the merits of the various proposals without any consideration for how much money they're going to get from donors. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the reality. And, you know, the Supreme Court has recently said that, you know, giving a politician a favor after the fact, like, you know, that it can be considered like a tip or a gratuity, and that's not corrupt. And so this is what some of the jury instruction wrangling.
That was the Indiana case, right? That was the case in Indiana.
Right. And so what you have is the lawyers right now in the background have been arguing about the jury instructions, about what is it that the jury is going to be told constitutes corruption? What is a corrupt act versus what is politics as usual? And that's what almost all these cases come down to.
Was it because the Burke trial wasn't that long ago, and now you've got the Madigan trial. But was it the Madigan trial in which they had Madigan on tape saying, don't say quid pro quo?
Yes.
Which I think is just so telling, right? He didn't know that they were listening. But even in private conversation, what he thought was private conversation, he's telling one of his lieutenants, essentially, yes, this is a this is a conditional transaction, but don't say quid pro quo because that's bad. So horse trading is okay. People can give us money and then we can do things, but it can't be premised on that. That's quid pro quo. Don't say quid pro quo. They've got him on tape saying that, but that's not a crime to say that. He has been slippery enough all these years. I agree with you, Eric. The feds almost always win these cases, but if ever one might get through, it would be Mike Madigan, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's I asked my readers to predict the news of 2025, and I asked them if they thought that former Speaker Madigan would end up in prison in 2025, and most of them said yes. I say no. I don't think he is going to, because first of all, I'm not positive he's going to be convicted. But even if he is, the gap between conviction and then sentencing hearing and then the sentencing hearing to the report date, those dates stretch on and on. So I don't think he will end up in prison in 2025. But I would think that this is a case. He's got great lawyers, very, very good lawyers. And this trial has gone on and on and on. And I don't know how the jury is standing it. They just had like basically a month off. I don't know how they're going to get themselves back up to speed on this stuff. But I can really see him saying, you know what, this was kind of stinky, but it doesn't rise to the level of corruption.
We'll pause here, Eric, although just as we take a break, and then I wanted to ask you about the Mark Zuckerberg story, maybe the Washington Post story in the news today as well. But is there one other prediction, either that we now know the results of 2024 is over, or that you're asking people about 2025 that you're most interested in? Which of these, we talked about some of them last week or on the pod? I know we've talked about some of these on one of our platforms here, but which of these stands out to you?
Oh, you want to talk about that right now?
Yeah, just give me one of them that you think is most interesting.
Well, you know, there's a whole bunch of them. I think that you know, one of the most interesting ones is whether the Chicago Teachers Union is going to go on strike or not. And I think that is that's a really major local issue here. And my readers and I both agree that they are not. I'm sorry, the readers think that they will go on strike. I don't think they will. I don't think I think the damage that it would do to Brandon Johnson, who was, of course, a former employee of theirs, and the CTU is the major funder of his campaign, I think it would look bad for Brandon Johnson, even though they're trying to frame it as not against Johnson, but against the CEO of the schools, Pedro Martinez. I don't think the teachers are going to go on strike. I think they're going to come to a deal probably within a month.
Hard to walk away from 4 years of 4% and 5% increases. Not most folks aren't getting that. Eric Zorin's on a phone line. By the way, Eric, the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, he'll sign you up if you just email ericzorin@gmail.com. For a pittance, you can get the premium copy, and you'll get extra good stuff from Mr. Zorin. What do we want Greenland for? Is there a particular strategic value? I've got an ice maker. What do we want in Greenland, Eric? Any idea about that?
I just don't know, because, you know, Greenland is owned by Denmark, and Denmark is an ally of ours, so I'm not sure exactly, you know, what, if there's an idea that we might want to have a military base there that Denmark doesn't want us to have. I'm not certain about that. It doesn't really make any sense, and I seriously doubt that incoming President Trump is going to expend much capital on that idea, just like I don't think he's going to really do much about the Gulf of America, as he wants to call it. So I think there are a lot of things that he's been talking about and rattling his sword about that aren't going to happen. I don't think, for instance, that he's going to try to reclaim the Panama Canal, that he's going to make some noise about it, but it's not going to happen. He's not going to get rid of daylight saving time.
Right. Well, and for that matter, use military force to get any of these things done, or economic force. He said that he would not rule out military force or economic force to either take Panama Canal or Greenland, but then he sort of backtracked on military force. I'm not exactly sure what economic sanctions we can lay on Greenland that would get them to pay attention. You know what, Eric? This is just a reminder. We've been to this movie before. We don't need to flap our chops about some of these things, which aren't going to happen and are weird and can be upsetting, but are only as important as we make them. And this is not on the important list.
Well, yes, you're right. But in some ways, you've got to look at it as a gift to radio talk show hosts. Right? You can talk about the Panama Canal and how it's kind of interesting that, you know, we essentially built the Panama Canal and then, you know, we ceded it to Panama, what was it, like at least 25 years ago. And should we have it back? Are they charging too much? What's going on? It's this idea of Canada as the 51st state. Kind of an interesting idea. Never going to happen, but it's one of those things that you can kick around on the radio, right?
I don't think Canada would want it, but I think Cuba might. I think the Dominican Republic might want to be an official U.S. state. I think there's plenty of places in the Gulf of America that would love to be the 51st, 2nd, and 3rd states. Frankly, I'm not sure why they aren't. You know, some of them have quasi-citizen status. Not Cuba,
well, Puerto Rico.
Yeah, right. Not Cuba, of course, but I mean, you know, to me, if we wanted to sort of clean up some of that stuff, I don't know that we want to. It would be a net negative for the other 50, probably. So maybe we don't have that as an incentive. Canada, I don't think, wants, you know, we're going to have to just do a full-scale invasion of Canada. We just march right across that border and take Toronto.
Yeah, well, you know, the question would be, do they want to give up their free health care and the other benefits of living in Canada? This is not going to happen. But again, it's one of those things you can sort of spitball about and talk about how, you know, that might be interesting. And what would the Canadians, you know, why is Canada a separate country? And is there some reason why it's not part of the United States? And I mean, it's just interesting stuff to talk about.
Fair enough. I'm Googling Greenland, for instance, so I get you on that. What did you make of Mark Zuckerberg saying that they're no longer going to fact check on the various Meta platforms, including Facebook? They're not going to do fact checking.
I'm really discouraged about that. And I think that these social media platforms, X and Facebook, and I don't know about, I'm not on TikTok, but I think that they do need to focus more on the kind of content that's being spread by their users. And that I thought that Facebook was on to something when they were having a panel of people going through and trying to get rid of disinformation on their site, just leaving it open and saying, you know, this is all about free speech. I think it's, first of all, is dangerous because they say that, well, we're going to have the community feedback. That these
community notes, yeah.
It would be edits like it is on you know, Twitter or X now. And that Twitter has become even more of a cesspool of misinformation than it was before, because community notes really doesn't do the job. And I mean, I just think that when you have a massive enterprise like Facebook or Next, you ought to have a massive editorial department behind it, making sure that the stuff put on there is not, you know, demonstrably false. And I don't think that's, I don't see why, with all the hundreds of millions, billions that the owners of these platforms have, they can't afford to make them better places for people to get accurate information. And also, you know, when you look at something like Meta, you think, okay, this is, you know, the Facebook company. Neil Steinberg, our friend Neil Steinberg, had a column the other day about how Rob Feeder, the former media critic in town, media columnist, was kicked off Facebook for absolutely no discernible reason. I mean, if you know Rob, he's not a harsh bomb thrower by any means. His Facebook page was fairly personal. It's about his daughter and his life. And Facebook just took it away, and he could not find out why. Neil tried to find out, and I've tried to find out through Meta, writing to their media department, why did you do this? Why did you take it away? And they just do. And I think that is something that they need to have a much more robust customer service area. I mean, and they've got billions of dollars. And I don't understand why they just kind of take their hands off and say, well, free speech. And then suddenly they'll take somebody offline for no discernible reason, and there's no obvious method of appeal.
The global policy chief at Meta is quoted as saying, "We wanted to undo the mission creep that has made our rules too restrictive and too prone to over-enforcement." Wow, I'm not tracking with that. You and I will talk more about this with our friends on the Mincing Rascals podcast. That'll drop tomorrow afternoon. It's always good to talk to you on the radio, and I'll visit with you tomorrow, Eric.
Great. Thanks, John. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Eric is the publisher of a newsletter in Chicago called The Picayune Sentinel. Email ericzorn@gmail.com. He'll sign you up for free.